So Liverpool get the job done just about against Burnley, a 1-0 victory. They're back within 9 points. It was a miserable old day at Turf Moor, Brian. One of those days where Jurgen Klopp, as long as they got the 3 points, does performance matter that much?
No, not at this stage of the season, Nathan, and in the position Liverpool are in. I think the manager is obviously quite happy with the squad he has, and he's almost everybody available, maybe Joe Gomez and Origi or two that are on the injured list. But I think it's always about getting the job done at Burnley anyway. It is, as they say, a difficult place to go. It's sometimes a much overused phrase, but not in the case of playing Burnley. Sean Dyche's team, very competitive, in a very difficult position now. And they played well today, I thought, Burnley. But Liverpool, it was an okay performance, not scintillating by any means, but they did the job, depend on the free kick. And Alisson, I thought, in the first half was outstanding. Didn't have many saves to make in the second half, but did it when it was necessary. Liverpool got the breakthrough, and then they were as comfortable as you could possibly be, I suppose, at Burnley without getting the second goal.
It was one of those games you see countless times this season where Liverpool, the better team, weren't at their best, but had that little bit of luck, if you can call it that, for Fabinho's goal, stuck at it, got their chance and took it. Whereas Burnley just cannot buy a goal, cannot buy a win at the moment. Incredible to think just won all season, and like they had the chances. Veghurst looking for that first Burnley goal. He's not going to get better opportunities than he did in the first half.
No, that's just 3 goals from 9 games now for Burnley, and Veghurst has come in to replace Chris Wood, who was the top scorer last year with 12 goals. But he wasn't exactly full of goals this season either, but they got a lot of money for him. Replace him with Veghurst, who has an excellent goal scoring record, which I looked up before the game today. It was quite impressive. He's 6 goals from 18 games pre-Christmas for Woods. But last year, like, he had 20 goals, 20, 17, 16, last 3 seasons. But they were 2 relatively handy chances for such an experienced player today, and particularly the second one when he hit it very poorly with his right foot, hit it wide under a little bit of pressure. The first one where he tried to dink the goalkeeper and made poor contact with the inside of his boot, and it was certainly going wide until Alexander Arnold came back to clear it out for the corner kick anyway. But they are big chances, and I suggest at the time they may rue them as it went on. That proved to be the case. Breakthrough goal. Fabinho did really well at the corner to react to Mane's header, which was going towards the goal but wouldn't have went in. Loads of Burnley players between the ball and the goal, but Fabinho helped it on his way. Hit Pope, good save, and Fabinho carried on and got the touch over that. And that's that little bit of luck, as you say, the teams higher up in the table often get, and teams near the bottom don't get. But they're in a fairly dire position now, Burnley, given the way other teams are playing. Norwich getting points, Newcastle getting points, Watford, fortunately for them, are not getting points. Everton got points yesterday, so they do need to start stringing results together consistently, Burnley, if they're going to get out of the trouble they're in.
Liverpool in the midst now of a really busy and important run of games across 4 competitions, Champions League coming up on Wednesday. Jurgen Klopp has a first choice back four. That was it today, I think, with Matip alongside Van Dijk. Do you think he has the strongest midfield and the strongest front three, or will we just see a consistent rotation?
I'd say we're more likely to see the rotation further up the pitch. Maybe a little bit of rotation in the full-back position because Tsimikas hasn't played now for a while. But when he played instead of Andy Robertson going back before Christmas, he looked more than adequate in, let's say, the bigger games and some of the lesser games. But I think the rotation is more likely to be in that centre midfield and front area.
What's their best midfield?
Well, the best midfield, I think, is probably, possibly the midfield that started, not started today, because I wouldn't put Keita in it, but Henderson and Fabinho are 2. I think it depends on the match, because Thiago is probably the best passer from the middle of the field, but he lacks the mobility required to get back into good defensive positions when the ball is turned over and the opposition are on the counter-attack. He just can't run quick enough. So the best balance, I'm not quite sure what the best balance is. I think when Curtis Jones, he's a really, really impressive, improving midfield player. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Milner, probably a little bit past it, but they get a good hour out of Milner when he plays or he comes on the match and stiffens it up. It's hard to know, really. I think it depends from game to game and what their fitness levels are like. In the front three, I'd say he now has five for the front three positions, where it was four until they signed Diaz. He was so impressive in the game against Leicester, and the option, obviously, Jota didn't start today, comes on later in the game, so you know he's in a good position, but there's still that vulnerability about him that they give the opposition chances because of the risk taken in the defensive defensive, I suppose, the lineup defensively, of saying, well, we trust ourselves to play a very good, well organised offside line. But I always think on that, you're dependent on the linesman and VAR getting it in your favour. And even, you know, we talked about before the game today, and it proved to be correct. Burnley got lots of chances where it was on the fine line. Is he offside? Not offside. And there was times he weren't offside. They got clear cut chances. So that always gives the opposition a chance of scoring goals in the game. It's risk taken. It's partly why we all enjoy watching Liverpool.
Is it a risk they have to take the way to play?
I don't
Klopp?
Think so.
Do you not, if they want that high intensity, high press, do you not have to have the defence right up towards the halfway
line?
I don't think
they need to play it as risky and as such a high line. I think they could modify it slightly and still be as effective. But look, Jurgen Klopp is a great manager. He's a great coach. He's a fantastic coaching team around him, and that's obviously something that they've chosen to play that way, with a special goalkeeper behind him who's usually sharp off the line, reads the situation so well. And he had to do that today. And he was many one-on-ones. I think he was in four one-on-ones today, and he handled them. Then the flag went up late on at least two of them, but other ones he had to make the save. So, you know, is it risk and reward? I don't know. I think they could modify it slightly and not take quite so many risks, and particularly at set pieces as well as an open play.
It's probably a little bit of scoreboard journalism to talk about Fabinho and his improvement and his influence on the team after he scored the goal, and he's in a really good goal-scoring run of form for Liverpool with five in his last seven. As a player, though, taking away the goals, the job he does in the middle of midfield, have you seen him improve over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think his status in the club and among the supporters has improved, because I think they saw the difference last season when they're having such a poor run, when they lost all those defenders, when Matip and Van Dijk and Gomez were all out injured at one time, and they had to play Fabinho so often, so frequently at centre-half. He did an adequate job there, but they struggled without him in the midfield player. That it's kind of like that old McAlady position. He was the prototype for that, sitting in front of the back four, playing it simple, using the ball very well when you get it, don't over elaborate or get too far forward. But he's got the balance very much right in terms of being the deepest defender, but also being quite creative when he's on the ball, and then getting forward and contributing vital goals, as you said, five this season. And just too lately that I've seen the matches we've covered, the goal against Brentford when they needed the breakthrough, and the vital goal today that proved to be the breakthrough and the winner. So he's an absolute key player for Liverpool. They have alternatives, but I think he's the best at that job in there.
Can you come on and talk about Ireland's attack shape? It's really exciting.
I don't remember ever getting that call 15 years ago.
The Six Nations on OTB. Don't miss a moment of the action. Subscribe to the OTB Rugby podcast feed now.
So 9 points is the gap to Manchester City with a game in hand. Are we all kidding ourselves to think that there's still a title race?
No, I don't think we're kidding ourselves. I think we're all hoping that it'll go, you know, down to the wire, and there'll be a real scrap over the last few games, and it won't be won as comfortably as it has been in some of the recent seasons. We have one season where it was really tight with Liverpool and Manchester City. Last season was a bit of a runaway for them. They were so far ahead of Manchester United, Liverpool the previous season. But I think while there's still so many games to go and both teams are involved in European competition, it looks like Manchester City have an easy enough tie in the next round, Sporting Lisbon. But they've got some tricky league games coming up, with Everton, Palace, Spurs, and the Manchester United, the derby game coming up. I think for us to have a contest, we need Manchester City to probably drop at least 4 points in those games, and Liverpool have got to, it's the problem for Liverpool that they've got to stay winning game after game. I mean, it's interesting, like, both teams only lost two league games. The difference is that Liverpool have drawn six, I think, compared to Manchester City's two, is it, or three, maybe. So that's the only difference between them. So, you know, if Manchester City were to lose one of those games and Liverpool maintain their form, we can still have that race until they meet each other, at least, where the pressure would be on Liverpool to actually win that game at City, which would be a tough task.
Well, I guess that's what Jurgen Klopp is hoping for, that they can go into that game knowing if they beat Manchester City that they're right there within 2 or 3 points after that, at the very least. So.
Yeah, but he's also looking at the other competitions. He's got the League Cup final with Chelsea week after next, and the Cup match with Norwich, the League match with Norwich, Champions League still going, massive game with Inter during the week, away to Inter. So you'd be looking at the other competition saying, well, you know, if we're not going to win the league, we can win some of these cup competitions, it'd be still a very good season. But of course, the league is the ultimate for them. Manchester City are winning them too regularly. Liverpool just got one dotted in between all those Manchester City wins. So they'll want to try and maintain a chase right till the end on it as best they can.
Just on this race for the top four, Tottenham today had a chance to capitalise on Manchester United's dropping of points again yesterday. Haven't taken it. It feels like it's going to go right to the wire with four sort of average teams scrapping it out. United again yesterday, another draw. Ralf Hasenhüttl saying afterwards, sort of, everyone knows that when you get United on the back foot that they're not the quickest, they're not particularly that eager to get back and help out. It doesn't feel like much has changed at Manchester United with the change of management.
No, I heard you saying that earlier in the piece you did before lunchtime, and I'd have to agree with you. I think Ranić has tried to change it round. He's tried different combinations, and initially he tried with the kind of box in the middle thing, and, you know, in the 4-2-2-2 system, and then he changed back to the 4-2-3-1, and that's kind of where they are now to accommodate all the attacking players. He's chopped and changed between Ronaldo and Cavani and Greenwood when he was available, and Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. But no matter what combination, whether it's Fred or McTominay in the middle of the field, or now McTominay and Pogba, it hasn't worked out on a consistent basis, and they're not winning enough games. And you're right, but the whole thing seems like it's in a bit of transition, both whether they need new players, which they do. They need a new manager, which they do. They have a new manager, but everybody knows he's only temporary. So that's a kind of a funny situation when you're in a club as a player or a staff member, where you know the bloke that's... You know that he's going to have the call on who the manager is going to be, but you know currently he's not making decisions about whether you're going to be a long-termer or not, and whether you're likely to be in the side. So there's a kind of state of flux there at Manchester United that probably doesn't do them any favour. And I'm not saying it's the only reason for the performances have been very mixed and lacking consistency, but I think he's been going through an experimental phase of having a look at a lot of players, whether it's Estallo at right back, whether it's, you know, Luke Shaw or Telles at left back, centre halves he's juggled around between three or four as well, and all the other positions I mentioned earlier. The goalkeeping one is the only one he hasn't juggled, but nothing has worked so far. And that's the way it goes with teams when you can't find a team that are efficient and get results. You end up juggling, chopping, changing, particularly where the club have so many players with high wages, high reputations, but they're just not doing it as a unit.
And those high wages, high reputation seem to be part of the issue now when you look at the stories midweek that the players aren't happy with the training. They're calling the assistant manager Ted Lasso because, you know, it's not the standard they would expect. But like, this has been four or five different managers now that the players haven't been happy with the training. It's a dressing room that a lot of stories seem to come out of. It doesn't seem like a dressing room where there's leaders and that there's a dressing room where there's characters who are saying, actually, this is on us now.
I begin to be dismissive of some of the stories. You know, I think when things are not going well, the players will try and find someone else to blame other than themselves. It's rarely a rare a dressing room that there's someone strong enough to come out and say we have to look at ourselves and maybe it's our fault. They look for somebody to blame, so they blame some of the staff that they feel are in weak positions. And as you said, says the manager, an American lad that's come in, he's probably in a weakish position. And does he know whether he's going to be kept on at the end of the season when Raniak goes to a new role? So again, it comes to that kind of state of flux and lack of leadership and lack of players playing very well. I mean, if Maguire was playing very well, maybe he would be the leader. If Ronaldo was playing very well, would he be the leader, or is he always be one, it's about me, am I scoring goals, I'm doing all I can to rescue.
Manager now, says he's not scoring enough goals.
Now he's not even scoring goals, so it can't be him. Where's the leader in the middle of the field? Certainly not Pogba, and McTominay is still a youngish player finding his way, trying to be. Fred is not the leader either, so you're right, there probably isn't the leader. Too many players are scrapping rather. Bruno Fernandes is not the leader either, because it's kind of fallen apart a little bit for him since Ronaldo's come in, being that one that's scoring the goals, creating the goals, being the main man, no longer the main man. It's just, which is a kind of a prediction many people come up with might happen when Ronaldo come in, and unfortunately with Manchester United that's been very much the case. So they've a lot of things to sort out, but they're still in the mix for top four because the others are not so good either. West Ham, Spurs, Arsenal, all very, I'd say, mixed and vulnerable and inconsistent as well.
Great stuff, Brian.
Thanks, Nathan. It's been good to be back.